If God asked for your opinion before opening the floodgates, what advice would you give? How might you have responded to the wickedness of human beings on earth? Welcome to The Good Word. This week, we are back on the study of the book of Genesis. I am Matilde Frey, professor of Old Testament at Walla Walla University in the School of Theology, and I am your host and study guide author. Our topic for this week is A World Underwater. My conversation partners are Jody Washburn, professor of Old Testament in the Walla Walla University School of Theology, and Alden Thompson, emeritus professor of Old Testament from Walla Walla University. Genesis 6 to 9 is the story of the flood, a text that brings a lot of questions, a lot of debates and discussions. And then, of course, we wonder, what kind of God is this one who is in charge here for the destruction of the world? So how would you respond to that? How would you respond to the world that is wicked and destroys itself?
We have the same question with Sodom and Gomorrah, and I think God takes a lot of bad raps for that, you know, as if he had a short temper and just, you know, wipes them out. But in both cases, it's Sodom and the flood, there was a vicious disease loose. And you might say it was God's protective action. He's not just striking out in anger. He's protecting the rest of the world and its inhabitants.
Jody, do you think that is a little bit of a too light a picture of this world? God is not in anger, when the text tells us that God saw and he regretted to have made this world.
Yeah, I feel my mind in a muddle as I try to think about this, because in a way, it's easy for me to read this narrative as being overwhelmed by chaos. And we're familiar with those terms, you know, the chaos and order from the earlier narratives in Genesis. We often talk about that. But coming here, it seems like the chaos has become viral, so to speak, right? It's spread and expanded to the point of no return.
Now, when I said that God is not angry, that certainly is an oversimplification, because when you see innocent people being destroyed, and if we don't get angry, there's something terribly wrong with us. And so I think if you're speaking in terms of human emotions, God would be terribly distraught to think that these creatures that he had made are doing what they're doing.
Yeah. And then what do you do? I think that's where there's a pause. I don't have a settled way of thinking about this. Because in a way, you know, when relationships get really messy or when our own projects get really messy, many of us fantasize about starting over. I mean, I used to, as a child, imagine a desk that would just, like a conveyor belt, right? My creative, explosive creativity would like move on and I could start again. And I see a bit of that, like this, something has gone wrong here, right? We need to start again. But God is not us, right? So what do we do with the question of how do we make sense of God? What are we supposed to make of God in this story? And we are afraid, I think, in many cases to open up that can of worms. I mean, we teach children at 9 months old this story, you know, that God came and wiped out the entire world is what we say to them. But we tell the story using little fluffy stuffed animals and we really don't know what to make of the story.
Well, that's true. So much of the Old Testament, I think one of the toughest things for parents to do is to teach children the Old Testament. You know, I think almost all Adventist children have grown up with Uncle Arthur's Bible stories. And Uncle Arthur, you know, he says at the beginning, he's told all the stories here that are appropriate to tell to children. And he has taken some of the stories that are not appropriate and made them appropriate. I think of the one that's so intriguing to me is when you have the story of Hannah and her and Peninnah. You know, Hannah's praying for children, And as Uncle Arthur tells the story, he says, you know, her friends had children, but she didn't have children, you see. Well, it wasn't friends, and it wasn't anything cheerful. See?
Yes, we really make it into a story that, but where I am always having the issue with this, that we then stay with that story.
Mm-hmm.
We
don't move on.
We don't
grow. Yeah.
Yes. We tell it to the children, and then we tell it again in a very similar way when you are 12 or 15, when you are 20, and you still keep that memory and those images from that children version in your head, and you don't go to, you know, ask harder questions, go deeper.
And some children are ready for those much earlier than others, and so one has to use a sense of judgment here.
Mm-hmm.
I think of one that forgotten which one of the Dibdol youngsters was read their Bible, and they came with the story of escape from Sodom and Gomorrah and what happened with Moab and Ammon and the daughters there. So asked her mother about it. One of the girls asked the mother about it, and her mother gave an Uncle Arthur type story response. And the child said, "No, Mommy, you just don't understand. Here, let me read it to you."
Yes.
But Alden, going back to your comment earlier of how our hearts, if we are whole, right? If we are fully human in a way, our hearts must be moved by, you use the word, like the destruction of innocent people.
Yeah.
But I would say even more than that, like someone overwhelmed by chaos. I mean, think of the pain that we feel when we see a loved one succumb to addiction, for instance, mm-hmm. right? It like at the mercy of forces that are beyond any of our understanding.
Well, doesn't even have to be addiction, just cancer.
Yeah. I mean, we could, any number of these examples, but the pain that we feel,
yeah.
When I read this, like when I think about your question, Matilda, of a maturing way of engaging with the text, I don't have a smooth answer, right? What do we make of God in these narratives? But I think that we are to be drawn toward a God who is moved by the plight of humanity.
Yeah, and I think it's also inappropriate that we talk about the violent God of the Old Testament and the gentle God of the New Testament. Now, I think there's a sense in which that is true, but God is not afraid to use fear in the New Testament. I think of that last verse in 1 Corinthians 4, "Shall I come to you with stick or with love and a spirit of gentleness?" And he's talking to the believers at Corinth, you see. In my experience of teaching, you know, if I've had a student who's not performing very well, I will come up to them quietly and say, "What would you do? You want me to come to you with stick or with love and a spirit of gentleness?" And about 70% of the students say, no stick, Thompson, no stick. I'll get it in. But about 30% say, "I need the stick. Bring on the stick." And as one of our graduates said at the time, probably half of those who say they don't want the stick need it anyway. So this motivational approach of how you touch people in ways, what will work? And those of us who've had children, you have to face that all the time. What works? And what works for one child will not work for another.
Yeah.
You only have one child, so you don't know yet.
That's right.
I am intrigued by that verse that you mentioned at the beginning. So the world is wicked and evil, all of it, from the heart, the core of the human being is considered evil continually, says the text. And then God looks at that. So in chapter 6, verse 6, the text reads, "And God was sorry that he had made man on earth, and he was grieved in his heart."
Now, mm-hmm. doesn't the King James say repented that he had made man?
Yes, several times this expression about God being sorry is also translated in places as God regretted or even God repented.
Yeah, in fact, you look at the Old Testament in the King James, God mm-hmm. repents more often than anyone else.
Yeah.
Now, modern translations say changed his mind, but it is anguish for God.
Yes, and that is, I think, what we lose when we think of changing the mind, regretting or repenting, mm-hmm. Because this is such a deep, a word that speaks of such deep emotion that is here attributed to God. And so God is expressing that deep feeling of pain. And that is why even the text has this parallel line to say, for example, that God felt the pain and was grieved in his heart.
Mm-hmm.
There is a parallelism. So those two words connect. They like strengthen each other. And that expression of feeling the pain instead of being sorry is important to recognize here.
And I think, you know, I've never experienced this because fortunately both of our girls are within the normal range, if I could put it that. But can you imagine what it would be like for a child loved by the parents does something catastrophic, like kill someone else? You know, the terrible feelings that must come from the parents.
Yeah. You know, I think it's important, this reading of Nicham, you know, to be sorry, to repent, because I've almost come to the point where I prefer to translate it more like be affected by. And when I say affected by, I mean deeply. One way that becomes clear is looking at where it's parallel with rachum, mm-hmm. you know, womb, compassion. You know, God is moved in the depths by humanity, right?
Yes.
The plight of humanity.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I feel like that is a more productive focus when we look at this text than to decide, like, is God punishing the people sufficiently to change how they behave in the future, you
mm-hmm.
know? Like, it's almost like God is modeling to be deeply moved by.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are some people, children, adults, that actually turn around as a result of fear, and it puts them on the straight and narrow.
Their behavior can change, because probably then there is the realization, where is my life going?
Mm-hmm.
What is the goal, and what am I here for? What do I do?
And ideally, mm-hmm. you see this both Testaments, but in the Old Testament, that God's laws are intended to make life better for you. In fact, you find it there in Deuteronomy, when Moses reports about the law. Other people, other nations will see all these laws and say, wow, what amazing people they have a God like this. You see, Moses says, we ought to listen to that.
Thank you so much for this conversation. It is definitely not fully that we can express everything here. But I want to thank my conversation partners Jody Washburn and Alden Thompson, and our program engineer Lindsay Gisbert, and all of you listeners for this lesson. For The Good Word, I'm Matilda Fry.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.